will be able to change people's digestive organs so as to be 100% adapted to pure fruit flesh. A sudden transition to living entirely on fruit flesh would be such an assault, such a breach of the laws of nature that its consequences border on the destruction of the organism. Such refined food belongs to the real human being or the finished godlike human being in the same way as universal love is the innate main characteristic of the same being. So the terrestrial human being must, in accordance with the nature of his organism, still eat impure food or extract its nutritional life units through a process of killing and the decomposition of corpses. But this does not, of course, alter the fact that his evolution carries with it another fact, that he, to an increasing degree, must seek his nourishment among such products as will less and less require the ghastly process described above, and that he is thus, in the area products as are made from the roots of plants, which means dishes that are made from potatoes, carrots, parsnips, beetroots, celery or other edible roots. The third category includes all dishes that are made from leaves and stalks, for example salads, vegetable dishes, the various forms of meat-free cabbage dishes and the like. Individuals who want to leave animal nourishment will thus be referred to seek their nourishment among the above-mentioned products or dishes, which constitute the great connecting link between meat and fruit nourishment. To lay down what he should eat or preferably choose from these foods is not possible, for this can in the main be decided only by the individual himself. As the great majority of the people on the earth are unhealthy and are therefore to be regarded only as patients, it will be very individual what the various beings will be able to tolerate. What can be tolerated by one is very often very bad for another. Furthermore, the mental attitude has a fundamental significance. The organism of the profoundly spiritually enlightened and loving being will in many cases be able to digest the strong, coarse root products only with great difficulty, just as the same can also sometimes be true of the coarse nut or kernel products. Such an organism will therefore be able to tolerate only the more mild and refined sorts. It can therefore be recommended only that the beginner vegetarian carefully tries out and then monitors the effects of this or that food made from vegetarian products in order to ascertain what for him or her is particularly appropriate or suitable. Every individual must carefully keep to the foods that cause him no inconvenience and whose digestion he, so to speak, does not notice. Here some will perhaps say that they can digest animal foods very well, but to this I must answer that it is really only a question of time how long they will have this ability, since it is due to the smell of their process of decomposition or putrefaction is not nearly as pungent and penetrating as in the decomposition of animal products. This in turn means that the excrement is not nearly so stinking or poisonous after the eating of vegetarian products as it is after animal products. The killing principle is therefore far less extensive in vegetarian nourishment than in animal. It is not such a great violation of the fifth commandment as that, and is therefore to be considered to belong to a higher layer of consciousness. Chapter 29 Boiling of the coarse or least digestible vegetarian products is retained as the vegetarian products mentioned here contain A life units that have to be killed before the B life units can be released. People, as they become more developed and their organisms become more refined and less suitable for carrying out this process of killing, have gone over to using boiling as the means of killing. What is left for the organism is only to carry out the process of putrefaction or decomposition. But for this the organism, by virtue of the digestive organs, is equipped with particular conditions for this to be carried out artificially. In addition to boiling, people have discovered frying from the promotion of the process of killing or destruction of the A-life units. This method of destruction is not to be recommended. True, it promotes the killing of the A-life units, but it also to a great extent converts their corpses to charred substances or ash, a process that is most unfortunate for the organism since this is created only for the promotion of the organic corpse substance and not for the treatment of ash. All frying will therefore be avoided in the households of the future. It is a different matter with boiling. It does not convert products to charcoal or ash but only liberates the organism from the process of killing the A-life units. It will therefore be retained as long as people are still obliged to use coarse vegetarian products of the coarsest and most indigestible plant products, a step backwards. But fortunately, evolution does not go backwards. It goes in the direction of the refinement of the organism and thereby makes it less and less suitable to carry out the killing process itself, at the same time as it to a corresponding extent leads forward to the pure fruit flesh, which, as previously mentioned, constitutes the highest ideal raw food for the human being. Chapter 30 Why pure fruit flesh will be the food of the future human being. With this we have come through the most important, principal analyses of the terrestrial human being's nourishment. These analyses have shown us that the ideal food, or the food that is most in harmony with the highest and moral laws and the new view of the world, is that which consists of vegetarian products. Of these, fruit flesh constitutes the highest, since its content of A-life units is extremely limited, the B-life units, for which it is vitally essential to be assimilated as nourishment in an organism, thereby preponderating to a corresponding degree. Pure fruit flesh as a means of nourishment will therefore be in contact with the observance of the great commandment of love, and will therefore exclusively become the food for the perfect being of love or the future human being. As the terrestrial human being has still not reached such a stage in evolution but still finds himself on the road towards this, he cannot yet live entirely on fruit flesh alone but must, as previously mentioned, eat such products as belong to the killing principle. But with ascending moral evolution or growing humaneness, the terrestrial human being moves more and more away from animal nourishment and moves, either consciously or unconsciously, towards the aforesaid highest food. This transition, however, cannot go in leaps and bounds, but only by the organism gradually getting used to the products we have described as the ideal food for the human being of today. Look up the symbol number 67A, to follow this explanation. The vibrations of the ideal food, the round figure in the uppermost corner to the left, signifies the human being as a life unit. The stair formation to the right signifies a section of the ladder of evolution of all living beings. The lowest step signifies the zone in evolution where the beasts of prey are. The next step signifies the zone to which the terrestrial human being at present belongs. And the following step symbolizes the area of the real human kingdom. On the lowest step to the right, one are the life units making up meat products, which are the food of the beasts of prey, is shown. The life unit on the next step constitutes one of the life units making up kernel, root and leaf products, which are the proper main source of nourishment for the terrestrial human being. The third life unit comes from fruit flesh, which is the highest food in the first zone of the real human kingdom. The dark area in the meat life unit constitutes that part of it that consists of a life units, or the life units that are not suitable for assimilation as nourishment into an organism and for which this assimilation means death. These life units therefore resist this assimilation in a natural way. Their collected vibration, which is shown on the picture as a zigzag line, is therefore far too strong for the human organism, whose vibration is shown on the next step in the form of the dotted zigzag line. If one looks at the symbol for the life unit on the same step, one will see that the dark area here is relatively smaller than in the meat life unit. This means that the A life units are not nearly as numerous as the bism to overcome. As this, however, through the force of habit involving meat and coarse vegetarian food, is trained to practice a far greater manifestation of power than is necessary for the assimilation of fruit flesh as nourishment. The vibration of this organism, as shown on the picture, is a little too strong for the fruit flesh, which is why it cannot as yet constitute the main source of nourishment for the terrestrial human being. On the picture, this is expressed by the fact that the zigzag line here is somewhat smaller than the zigzag line for the human vibration. From the symbol of the human being as a life unit in the upper left-hand corner, there are three dotted lines leading down, each to their own particular step. This symbolizes merely that the terrestrial human being's field of nutrition stretches from the meat life units, via the root, kernel and leaf products to the pure fruit flesh. Of these, the lighter or milder forms of root, kernel and leaf products will therefore constitute the temporary ideal food for the terrestrial human being. Here a growing habituation to fruit flesh must be taken into account, which will exclusively become the ideal food for the perfect or completely evolved human being in the first zones of the real human kingdom, and thereby make him a divine aspirant to later and even higher zones, where this food will then again be replaced by a 100% air nutrition. The lungs will thus ultimately come to take over the entire process of nutrition, and the human being will then have left behind all the coarse physical forms of existence and have come into a zone where his organism will no longer have to obtain its nourishment from corpses through a process of putrefaction or decomposition, will not have to be a well of sewage or a means of conveyance for stinking excrement or waste products, but will be exclusively a manifestation of the fact that here to the great creating power of love has also overcome all difficulties or all the forms of trouble that today bind the human being to the primitive sphere of sickliness and illness. Chapter 31. Some hints to the beginner vegetarian to give instructions for combinations or compositions of vegetarian products or the preparation of vegetarian dishes lies, as previously mentioned, entirely outside my mission or task, since in this particular area there is now a whole literature with tables and chemical analyses written by capable experts. I would suggest only that the dishes be as simple as possible. Enjoy them preferably without strong spices and get entirely away from big dinners with many courses and all the superfluous alcoholic or poisonous drinks and sweet desserts. One or at most two vegetarian dishes and a single glass of water or fruit juice do not overexert the organism and promote the highest level of health and physical well-being. For the as food, to this category belong all strongly stimulating narcotic substances. That these cannot be regarded as proper sources of nourishment is due to the fact that they act with vibrations that are far too strong, vibrations that are far superior to the vibrations of the human organism, and therefore cause this organism to vibrate in time with them. As the effects of this appear in the form of stimulation, intoxication, anesthetization or loss of self-control and the complete physical and mental undermining of the individual, These stimulants can belong only to a primitive level of consciousness and cannot possibly belong to a zone where a real overshadowing by the Holy Spirit or a permanent experience of a glorified consciousness can take place. Chapter 33. When one is without love towards the microscopic beings that constitute the substance in our own organism, it now remains for me to say only that the purpose of this book has particularly been to show that in order to gain a completely happy faith, one must learn not only to love one's fellow beings and other visible and universally known species or forms of living being, but that one must also learn to practice the great commandment of love in our relation to those forms of life that, in the shape of substance, elude our physical sight and which constitute the microcosmos in our own organism. Only through this can we hope for a similar kindness or glorified existence from the great macrocosmic being in whose organism we ourselves are the microcosmos. So it has been my wish to give my readers an understanding of the fact that without the practicing of love towards our own organism's myriads of small, microscopic rightful inhabitants, there can be absolutely no perfect observance of the fifth commandment, absolutely no qualification for being a perfect instrument in the divine world plan.